Now you're just pandering, Mino. So, we're getting reports that the Mavs have done a deal with Golden State for Willie Cauley-Stein, according to Woj, who's dropped a bomb.
That was 3 minutes ago, and if that's the truth, which everyone believes Woj, that is a good get.
Well, we can talk about that anytime.
Yes, we can.
But today is a very special day, because today is January 24, 2020. That means today is the 26th birthday of Sports Radio 1310 The Ticket. And joining us now is the man who farted, fell down, and started the entire radio station. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Reiner.
Mike.
Well, we're out of time.
All right. Thank you very much. Good night, everybody.
Here he is.
What's up, man?
Up next, disaster.
It's going to be 45 minutes of this.
Yeah. Can I just sit here and listen to every drop I have in there?
You'll be here for another 3.5 hours.
It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you boys, too.
How we doing?
We're doing all right.
Did you go down to sales?
I did.
Okay, because they issued an edict that we haven't seen Michael yet. Send Michael down. We have to talk to Michael.
Now they're all filing charges.
Yeah. Right. No restrictions now, though, right?
Yeah.
You're not under the company umbrella.
That's right. Fair game now.
Yeah. Now it's just criminal.
We'll deal with that.
All right. Well, before we get into stuff and you and what you're doing and all that and your decision-making process, it is a big day, which I imagine for you, I don't know if you look forward to this day like the day before. I don't know when you wake up, if you think about it immediately. But it's here. And whenever you do wake up and your eyes open, it's special.
First thought.
Yeah.
First thought. I always know what day it is. It is on my mind constantly, 2 or 3 days out. And I spend a lot of time just, you know, reminiscing on the things that were going down and the days leading up to it and just how hectic and how crazy and what a thin line we were all walking just to get the thing up and running. And then there was the acceleration of 6 o'clock that morning and the medic, Dr. Bay, on the air.
The medic.
And we are finally up and running.
Describe your feelings that day 26 years ago, because, yeah, you have the radio on 6 a.m. ready to have this thing going, but you spent so much time beforehand getting it done. So
did you sleep?
That's what I want to know. Right.
No,
at what time you woke up? And
I didn't sleep.
So did you stay up at the station?
I went home and tried to sleep, but never did.
After closing down Louis.
You know me a little bit too well, don't you?
Takes one to know one, brother.
Yeah, it does. It does. About 4 o'clock, I got out of bed and went up there just to... I didn't have anything particularly to do or anything like that. I just wanted to be there. Just wanted to see what was going on, see how chaotic and out of hand things were going to be, because we were playing the loop. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And had been all weekend.
That's right.
The loop over and over and over again.
Was that 72 hours or 48 hours?
Yeah,
that was,
I think it started on at maybe Friday, but at least Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And the loop was going, and at 6 o'clock, they were going to hit the switch or whatever they did in that room, and boom, we're off.
How many of y'all were up here when 6 a.m. rolled around? Well, I mean, was it like all hands on deck?
No, it wasn't all hands on deck. I know I was there. Spence Kendrick was there. Spence was the big guy. And Jeffrey Dunbar was there. And we were all in the other production room listening. And when 6 o'clock rolled around and the medic took the airwaves and said all that stuff that he said, we were just looking at each other and going, man, we effing did it.
at the very least, you could say that you made it on the air.
Yes, we made it on the air.
Right.
Now, we had no idea of the chaos that would ensue within a matter of minutes after that. But we did, by God, make it on the air, and nobody thought we would even do that.
What was the chaos? What happened?
Name it.
Well, they started off, so this was Super Bowl week.
Yes.
Yeah, this was Super Bowl week, but everybody hadn't gone yet. Everybody was still on site. But you had a situation where, try to picture this. Let's say somebody came in here and bought the wolf and didn't move them out right away.
Oh, yeah.
Where you would have two radio stations under different ownership sharing the same site. And that's essentially what was going on. Because across the hall, there was KZPS. And we sorely, sorely underestimated what it took to get a radio station up and running. I mean, just the stuff you need that we didn't have.
Right. And weren't y'all like stealing stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Cactus Pryor and the OD and guys like that?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I knew all those guys and I could go over there and say, hey, man, come on, give me a little love here.
Can I have your stapler?
Yeah. And most of them would sneak me whatever they possibly could. And a few days later, the clamps got put on all that, so we were kind of on our own. But, man, it was just so incredibly chaotic that first day, that first week. The other thing was that we bought a terrible, terrible signal. If you think 1310 sounds bad now, you should have heard it then.
Oh, you had to be in certain areas to pick it up.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was awful.
Yeah. But it was the only one we could possibly get. You know, if we didn't get that, then we're down to 770, 990, you know, one of those others where you are literally rumored to be broadcasting.
Yeah.
Was that just a straight tower issue and you guys were able to bolster up its power later on?
Man, it was everything. I don't think they had done any kind of maintenance to that transmitter in years. It was just a mess.
And for people who don't know, what was your time slot that first day?
We were on from 11 to 2.
Yeah, you and the Hammer 11 to 2. Kurt Menefee was on 9 to 11. And then Dunham and Miller 2 to 5. And then Coop 5 to 7 or 5 to 8?
5 to 8.
5 to 8, yeah. Okay. And so when you're... That's the thing, is you're trying to get a radio station up. Like, you have so... The fish you are frying are large, but you have a show to do. Were you nervous about the show or nervous about the station? Or did it all just run together?
It all ran together. I mean, I truly learned how to compartmentalize from that.
Amen, you know, brother.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you? You know, when you're on the air, you were on the air, you think about that, you try not to get distracted. But that was kind of hard because a lot of the time when we were on break, somebody would come in there and say, hey, this is going on or that's going on or we don't have this, we don't have that. Where's this? Where's that? You know?
Yeah.
So my compartmentalization efforts were somewhat thwarted, but over time, I learned how to do it. And, you know, when I was not doing that, then you turn attention to other stuff. But when you're on the air, you're on the air. And I quickly learned that I wanted to be on the air really, really bad.
Yeah, get away from that other
stuff.
Hey, guys.
I want to ask one question about that. At what point were you able to relinquish most of your administrative responsibilities and just focus on the show?
Probably about, I don't know, a month, 6 weeks in, like that.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, but it's still, I'm sure that had to have seemed like 6 years.
Eternity.
God. I mean, talk about a whole different outlook on life once that happened.
And you don't, you know, you're a notorious, horrible sleeper. You must have not slept hardly at all for 3 months.
It wasn't quite as bad then as it is now, thank God. But it was still pretty bad. It was still really rough.
Did you get middle of the night phone calls as putting out fires and things? Literally.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, the station's on fire.
Yeah. Or we're off the air. And you know, the other thing was, one thing that I really didn't know anything about, or not enough about anyway, was how to hire an engineer. And the guy we hired that we brought on board was the only one I could get because we didn't have enough money to pay a really good one. And that's one thing about engineers. If you ever find yourself in the position of having to hire an engineer, they will demand a lot, and they will get it, too.
But you guys couldn't pay them.
Yeah.
So basically nothing's changed in 26 years.
Yeah, essentially.
Is this when you got the wisecracker?
No, the wisecracker came along. He was not there on day one. He came along a little bit later on. And, man, I'll tell you, that guy was a godsend.
Yeah.
Because, number one, he knew what he was doing, which the other guy did not. And all the other guys that we talked to in between, they were either real sketchy or we just didn't get the right vibe from them, or they wanted too much money. We couldn't give them. Well, we somehow landed the wisecracker, and this is Tim.
Did you name him, by the way?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Wisecracker.
I named it that because he wanted to get involved. You know, he didn't want to be on the air or anything like that, but he really liked the fact that we all like to have fun, and when he would be out on remotes with us, he liked to have fun too. He
would
join in, and he was all the time, you know, getting involved and inserting himself. But he was actually funny.
Yeah, oh yeah. I remember him being very funny.
Yeah, I mean, we liked him, you know?
Does he still have those stations out in, is it Graham?
Yeah.
Somewhere out west of Fort Worth?
He does. I had lunch with him in the last year.
Okay.
And yeah, he's still got those stations, and he still listens, and he's probably very well aware that we're talking about him right now.
Do you remember, or do you, I'm sure people that were there do. I don't know, Gordon was on the show, was on Skip's show as like an intern, right? Is that right? Something like Gordon. That?
Yeah.
Something, he had something going on.
Yeah, but Gordon was trying to gain a toehold any way he could.
Sure.
And he would insert himself into the big middle of anybody's show. He was up there all the time.
Well, he had nothing else to do.
No, he didn't.
Nothing.
He didn't. And he had clearly seen that if he was ever going to make his way through this world in anything at all meaningful, it was going to be through this. And he stayed up there all hours, day or night. He would jump on anybody's show, and, you know, he was Gordon. He thought nothing about walking in there and shooting the wheels off of anything, just like now, you know?
Do you guys remember, though, like, speaking of him and being on that show, I imagine, like, when you did open the phones up and you gave the phone number out, and I imagine you're all staring.
By the way, 787-1310.
Yes, please. I remember, I guess you guys were all probably gathered around the little computer screen or whatever, seeing if the phones would ring.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
and then
we
when
were.
They did, you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah, we
oh,
were.
My God, they're calling
we have at
us.
Least one listener.
Yes.
But, yeah, the phones were there that very first day. That was true exhilaration because I'd wondered whether or not people were going to know what to do with this. But as things turned out, we found out that most people had heard sports radio in other markets because by that time, this was only one of the very few markets of any substance that didn't have it yet. But people had, you know, traveled in other parts of the world and they'd heard it there and they heard how it works and they knew what to do that first day.
And you did have Randy, I mean, on BAP because he did take calls.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the evenings.
Uh-huh. They did. Yeah, but.
And then you had the Brad Sham thing.
Yeah, and there was sports. I mean, it was around here, but as far as it being a round-the-clock thing, that's what we were wondering. Would anybody be ready for something that had been relegated to 6 o'clock at night?
Or Norm in the morning.
Or Norm in the morning.
Yeah.
Until he came on, when he came along. If they would be ready for that all the time.
Dude, I remember being in school and at whatever, thinking how weird it was at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, being able to listen to people talk about sports. It was the weirdest, greatest thing ever. Like, cranked up in my apartment, you know, and reverberating through the house, listening to Kurt talk about sports. How long did it take before you hated the Cowboys? Like, the second caller?
Hey, Mike, look, man. What's going on with Barry? And were you just out about then?
I'd had it by then.
Right.
Oh, I'd so had it on the Cowboys by then.
Two calls.
Two calls in, man. The anti-Cowboy faction was up and running.
All right, let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's discuss more with Mike about the big anniversary, and then we'll dig into what's he doing.
Out the streets. Gotta be handy with the steel. You know what I mean?
It's more pandering. To both of you now.
It was a black night.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny D was on the street.
God, this guy's so liquored up.
So I can get to the road, rolling around, chilling all alone.
You know, east side of the OCP, station trying to find the Greek. You're gonna have to come back out there. You're gonna it would be really cool if you made like if you flew into LA on a Wednesday night at training camp and didn't tell anybody and just slid right on in to Cafe Habana.
In like a James Brown robe.
Oh yeah, he's all pimped out, you know. That would be awesome.
Could happen.
I know, right? Could happen.
As I go up there just in memory of Mike to do regulators, and then as soon as I'm about to hit Mike's part, he slides right in, grabs the mic.
All the way across the room, just slides.
Just hit the east side, and everybody... We need that, Mike. We need it.
Could happen.
All right.
It's funny because people ask, like, well, what is he doing? Like, what does he do? I'm like, whatever he wants to do. Like, that's what you do. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah, that's about the size.
Pretty much,
yeah.
Right? All right, Mike Reiner is in here. We're talking about the big anniversary.
Believe it or not, nobody thought it would happen, but here it is.
Yes. Donovan Lewis is in here in Mike's hot seat. So 26 years ago, I heard George and Craig and Gordon talking about this a little bit this morning. At what point, so you get the thing up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Did you also have payroll up and running by this point?
Yeah, we did. We had a business manager, and when you hear the term get with Melinda, that means go see her. Melinda was, I don't know, she just sort of showed up one day.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden we had this person named Melinda who was doing all that stuff. And I thought, okay, great. That's excellent. I don't want to know where she came from, who she is. We got somebody. That's it. I figured if I asked too many questions, then that would jinx it all. So I never did. But I think that she used to work for Spence's dad. And
okay.
He knew her that way.
So you didn't hire this guy?
No.
Okay.
I did not hire her.
All right.
That's a Spence thing. She was good, though. I liked her.
So Danny asked a question about the administrative stuff, and you said about 6 weeks in is when you fully concentrated on the show. But
yeah.
How far along into it did you have that sigh of relief? Because day one, you have the sigh of relief because mm-hmm. you're on the air.
Mm-hmm.
But chaos ensued.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how far along did you know that you had a good thing going on? And take all the other money stuff out of it, that what we're doing, the product coming out of the radio, is exactly what I wanted it to be.
I knew that right away. But because I was so tied up with the other stuff, I really couldn't, you know, really couldn't enjoy that aspect of it the way I would have liked to have. But I knew from day one, just from hearing the guys that we brought on board on the air, hearing Kurt, hearing Dunham and Miller, but what Grego and I did, what Chuck did, really everybody except Skip, you know, just hearing what they did. I mean, it sounded like the station had been there for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounded very well formed, very, very well in place. And if you take the production elements out of it and stuff like that, just as far as the content of the show and shows and everything, it was very well formed and very highly evolved, and I was really, really excited about that aspect.
I've never heard the story, Corby, and excuse me if you've told this story 1,000 times, but of Skip's departure.
Oh, dude.
I have no idea how that went down. I've heard a million stories, but never that. It's just he had the first words, and then about a year later, boom, it's over.
Yeah. that came down after we were sold for the first time. We lasted a year under the watch of Spence and Cardinal Communications, as it was known then.
Because he went to Stanford.
Mm-hmm. And then he put it up for sale. And by the end of that first year, I don't think it was profitable, but we had a viable product. I mean, everybody out there was talking about it. It was generating buzz out there. I mean, we had already made a significant dent in the radio market, if not the, you know, business end of it. But he didn't have too much trouble unloading it, and the guys he unloaded it off onto was SFX, which also owned KRLD. And for that next year, that second year, we were like their sister station. Well, KRLD SFX was a very well-established company and everything, and
they came in and they took pretty much one look at Skip and just went, And see, here's the thing about Skip. Everywhere he goes, job one for him is to find somebody in the chair of power inside the organization and cozy up to him and make it to where they will protect him and they will let him do whatever he wants to do and run his scene however he wants to run it. And nobody else can say anything to him. That's the way he rolls. And that's what he did here. And Spence was that guy for him. Spence would protect him. And nobody else could say anything to him. But once Spence sold the station, that game was over for him. And he was pretty much on the first train out.
It was so obvious that he was just this outlier. In a, you know, you guys mentioned the bunker very early on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a huge part of it.
He didn't fraternize at all, did he?
No.
And you could just, you could sense it. You know, there was this thing going on. There was this communal aspect of this radio station. And even, you know, like I got up here 6 months afterwards as an intern and you could see it from an out. I mean, the farthest outsider, which is what I was. You could see that.
Yeah.
You could see that he wasn't part of anything.
No.
And it was weird.
Yeah. And all of his newspaper colleagues, when they found out we were bringing him on board, they told me that it was going to be that way.
Yeah.
And I knew it. I mean, I'd seen the way he was with them. How he wouldn't even talk to him, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he was just on an island by himself. And like in interview situations after games and everything like that, everybody would be around the coach or Mark Aguirre or Rolando or whoever it might be. And he would be kind of standing off to the side. And then when everybody else was gone, he would walk up and do his thing. And then that's fine. You know, if that's the way you want to conduct your business, that's fine. But he was just so abrasive and so in your face with it all. You know, like, I'm better than you guys. You know, I'm going to ask them guys stuff that you're not. I'm going to get stuff that you won't get. You watch me. I'm the one that matters here, not you.
Yeah, when he got dismissed, it was, there was celebration around here.
That's what I was going to ask. Did it feel like a time for celebration?
Yeah. Nobody was sad, that's for sure.
Yeah.
There were no tears shed over that one.
When you guys, so when you brought in everybody and you know, Coop was probably the trickiest one, right, to get him back from Philadelphia?
Yeah.
But he jumped at the chance.
He really wanted it.
Yeah, there wasn't too much wrangling going on.
No, he wanted it really bad, and he would do just about whatever he had to do to make it happen. Now, there was a real funny situation. Maybe you probably know about the dinner with Brad Sham story.
Yeah, he was coming to the house.
Yeah, Brad and Chuck worked together at KRLD, and they were friends and everything like that. One time, the Cowboys are up there in Philadelphia for a game, and we've been going back and forth with Chuck, and we pretty much had him on board, and to the point where he had put his house up there up for sale, and there was a sign in the front yard. Well, Brad Sham is coming over for dinner that night, and he had to go out there, take the for sale sign out of the yard and hide it around the side of the house. And if they would have decided to take a walk around, you know, around the estate or something, and Brad Sham sees that, then these proverbial jig would have been up on us.
It's so,
because you know, at that time,
at
that time it was a secret.
Right.
You know, nobody knew that we were coming on.
And how long did you keep the secret?
Oh, a long time. It was one of the best kept secrets I have ever seen anywhere.
I can't believe it. Like, I seriously still to this day can't believe a secret like that was able.
I
like
know.
In today's day and age, forget it.
Yeah.
How big was the circle as far as people knowing?
Just only those who had to know did. And when those who had to know were brought into the circle, I would tell them, look, if you want to do this, then you keep this secret. And if it gets out, I will find out who let it out, and they'll be gone. I mean, I wouldn't front no games on this.
Was it a circle of 15?
Probably not that big. Probably 8, 10, 8 to 12, I'd say.
Okay. All right. And you know, George always tells a story that he's got a little kid,
at the time.
And this was a massive deal for him.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And trying to sell this on his wife.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm just going to go over. I'm at an established, like the most established radio station that the market has. I mean, who knows where I'm going, but I'm established. I'm getting a paycheck. We're paying rent, all that. And then to just fly the coop and end up here at a place where nobody knew anything. That was ballsy.
Yeah, and I thought we had lost him for a period there. Because when we were, I was talking to some of the other guys about who else we could get. Because, you know, I had Grego, I had Junior. We were thinking we were going to be able to get Skip, but I didn't know what I was going to do about everything else, you know. But Junior wanted a partner. And he said, you should look at George Dunham. And I knew a little bit about him, not a lot. You know, I'd met him a time or two. I judged a battle of the bands that he was in when he was in junior high.
He talks about that still.
You yes, can be assured does. That he had the same haircut at the very least.
Oh, there's no doubt. Some things never change in this world.
No.
But, yeah, I talked to him, and you know, he seemed pretty positive about it all. And I thought, okay, all right, well, let's visit about this down the road when we're a little bit closer to it. When I've got, you know, something a little bit more tangible I can throw at you. And that's kind of where we left it. But in my mind, I was counting him in, you know. So a few weeks pass and we get a little bit closer and, you know, the thing's starting to turn into a little bit more reality. I'm a little bit more aware of what I can and can't do with these guys and everything. And I get him on the phone and I start to talk to him about this. And he says, man, I really don't think I can do this. I'm really pulling for you guys. I'd give anything if I could. But, you know, I'm married. I got a kid. I think I'm headed off into the sales end of the thing over at KRLD.
Oh, would have been miserable.
And I just really don't think I can do it. But, man, I'm really going to be pulling for you guys.
What turned him around?
I don't know. All I know is that about a month or so, maybe 6 weeks or so after that, I got a call from him saying, so is there a place for me over there?
Still, yeah.
And I said, yeah, there is, if you want it.
Dude, he would have been the Pete Best of this place.
Yeah.
He might have gotten a little taste of sales and said, yeah, no.
Can you imagine, George?
I think he would have been a really good salesman.
He would have been.
Because
he would
so
have been
personable and so funny.
I guarantee you, he could have made that work.
No doubt.
If he wanted to, but he'd have been miserable.
Yes, and he always would look at the success of this place and be like, my God, what have I done?
Yeah, what did I do?
Yes. All right, let's come back. We'll talk a little bit to you, Michael, about the decision you made last month. And then me and Donovan and Danny will try to pull the dagger that's pierced in between your shoulder blades that I jammed in there in December.
It's Ace Hardy.
The Soroa Twins return to the bigger and better Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo, broadcasting from the Amon G. Carter Exhibits Hall tomorrow. The Stock Show runs through February 8th. Enjoy the rodeo in the new Dickies Arena. Bigger entertainment in the auditorium, livestock shows, carnival midway food, and acres of shopping. More info or to purchase tickets, visit FWSSR.com. Man, I've forgotten about this, Mike.
I hadn't.
We don't give this enough love.
I know. I want another shot at this.
Okay, I
think we can
too.
Do this better.
We really can.
Yeah, we have a concert coming up in about a month, bro.
That's
As
right.
As a matter of fact, we do.
I feel that we need to run this back.
Okay.
We didn't give it enough justice.
No other can to make you see.
Hit a pop.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah. He's killing it.
Falsetto Dungeman.
All right, Mike Reiner's in here. By the way, speaking of bands, you have a gig tonight.
Yes.
Plug it.
We will be at the Barley House tonight.
Ooh, that will be
where it all started, right? Yes, sir.
Friday night at the Barley House.
Late night or happy hour?
Late night. 9 p.m.
You know, we were in here in the break talking, and I got one of the Mike Love witticisms of... The heart wants what the heart wants, Corby.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do miss telling you to shut the F up. Like, really, really miss that.
Well, okay. I only say because I get that kind of thing so much from you.
He lovingly looks at
yes.
you.
Well, Mike.
The heart wants what the heart wants. So, you know, people that are tuning in that haven't heard you... talk about this outside of your main announcement that you had, which, by the way, did you ever imagine that the main thing that we would take out of that are the 38 footsteps of you walking down the hall. That's the one drop that we pull from this badass retirement announcement.
That's the best thing about it. That's the thing about it that I like the most.
And we just assume you got lost.
What are you doing?
Well,
here?
I did kind of just fade into black.
By the way, side note here. So we went to the stock show 2 days ago, 3 days ago.
Right.
And you know what a cluster it can be finding that building.
Oh, yeah.
And so, dummy over here, first time.
Yeah, I was a stock show virgin.
He gets there just fine. Everything's cool. And then we leave, and he left at 6:50 to go get his dog so he could drive back to Dallas and get his dog at daycare.
Right.
So he leaves 10 minutes before I close things out. And then I take my time, pack the bag up, go to the bathroom, walk through. I buy some soup at the stock show.
Mm-hmm. Talk to P1s.
Talk to some P1s. Walk all the way out. And you know that's about a 10-minute walk to get back to the car at least.
Right.
Walk back to the car, get in, start the car up. At this time, it's like 7:25 or something like that. And I start to head out of there. And you, before you hit university, you hit like the southernmost part of the stock show.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm taking that left out of there, who do I see but Dingu rounding the corner? He had been walking around looking for the parking lot for 30 minutes.
I circumnavigated the stock show for, I believe, 1.5 times.
Dude, I feel you on that. It's easy to get all turned around and just knocked sideways in that place like crazy.
And you're just smelling manure.
Yeah.
Like there's no...
Yeah.
It was cold. It was raining. I had a 25-pound backpack on me.
God.
And I walked about probably 2.5 miles trying to find my car.
It can happen, man.
So is there anything that you want to add or say on top of, to piggyback off of what you said in your little prepackaged speech to the P1s? Because they're begging for anything and... They want to hear something. I don't know what, but they want to hear something.
Well, let me ask you, is there anything that I left unsaid?
I don't think so.
I think a lot of people want to know when the decision was made, and it's always the, you know, you've been thinking about it for a few months, but there had to be one of those days where you kind of wake up and say,
no,
the foot down moment where you said, I'm doing this and I'm sticking with it,
right,
and I'm going to let people know that need to know.
It really didn't happen. It did not happen.
You just quit showing up for work?
Yeah, pretty much. It was just a very gradual thing, and I tried really hard to talk myself out of it. I mean, I had very difficult, introspective conversations with myself, and I don't like doing that.
Well, we need a recording of those.
Who is this? Wrong number.
Where are you?
You up?
I'm Mike. I'm Mike.
Yeah, there you go. You up is the best.
WYD. New number. Who dis?
You're my whore.
New number.
It's me.
It's you.
What are you doing?
God, I will live in infamy forever.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
But
so
yeah, I tried to talk myself out of it, and I just never did. I couldn't.
I think that's the best way to go out. If you can't talk yourself back into it, and it almost sounds like an athlete, you know, that they just, and I've heard this before. We've had these dudes on before that they were told by people that were in the same game as them that they would know.
Yeah.
You'll know when it's time.
Yeah, and like I said in the video, there are a couple of guys that I know in other fields who were like CEOs, far more significant in their field than I am in mine, for sure. And they, in the last year, walked away from their gigs. And I had conversations with both of them when I would run into them. And I asked both of them, how did you know, man? And they both told me different versions of the same thing. And that same thing came back to, when it's your time, you'll know.
That's really cool that there is some sort of internal mechanism that allows you to realize that.
Now, for a long time, I had no idea what that meant. I said, okay, when it's your time, you know. Okay, well, how do you know?
Right.
You know?
Did your prostate explode?
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's a tell in there somewhere.
I think it's just the natural evolution of time, getting older, like I feel more wisdom than I did 10 years ago. You just evolve and you know things more and you sense things more. And I bet it's a very similar thing coming to terms with retirement.
Yeah, it probably is. That makes a whole lot of sense. Like I say, I didn't understand what they meant, but there came a time when I just had some sort of epiphany and all of a sudden I knew perfectly what they meant. I knew exactly what they were talking about.
And you know what's funny is that I think it was in that video. I can't remember, but it was in one of those pieces where you were talking about a year ago over Christmas break. And I remember coming back from that break where you had an extended break of, you know, 20 days or something like that.
Right.
And we came back and I was like, man, did you get bored? And you were like, no, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Because typically you're like, I am ready to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have been the first sign.
Well, you will note that I stopped going on trips.
Yeah.
When we were on vacation over the last few years.
Yeah.
I was kind of giving this a test run then.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Just flirting with the idea, but only in the last, I don't know, 5-6 months did it get really serious.
Yeah. And I wonder, too, because just the, and that is the test run of you're not, I mean, you're going to travel, you're going to do stuff,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah.
But in your head, you're like, can I take this for 20 days straight of just being here? Because the majority of your life is still going to be here, right?
Yeah, right.
You're not moving.
No.
You'll be here
until... I'm not planning on it.
Yeah, anyway. You'll be here till you check out.
Yeah, I probably will.
Wow.
I'm probably a lifer.
214 for life, bro.
That's right.
Well, you got to get that tattoo.
Man, I do.
On your forehead.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what you need.
And maybe a little peep teardrop down
right,
the cheek.
Right. So have you missed anything up here? Do you, I mean, miss the day-to-day of it or any of this mess?
Not yet.
Yeah.
But I'm sure I'll get to that point where I do.
Like,
I mean,
okay.
I miss you guys.
What about, what about like the Astro story, because I immediately thought of you.
Yeah.
Where you're like, okay, God, maybe I need to talk about this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anything you need to say about that while you're here?
Those cheating bastards.
Mike Fiers is a hero. He's kind of getting torched in some circles out there, but by God, Mike Fiers is a hero. That is a stud.
You know, we go on these road trips all the time, and that's when I... Because I don't see you every day. I'm off at noon and you're here for the afternoon show. But when we went on the road and all the chaos that was on the road always involved us three.
Yeah.
Other people may have been involved every now and then, but the base.
Yeah, the linchpins were us.
No question about it. So this first road trip without you is going to be really strange.
Yeah, it's true because Bob and Dan, they don't
go out.
No,
Dunham and Miller, they got to get up too early.
George will hang if it's an East Coast.
So we'll see him a little more bit. In Miami.
That's true.
And then every now and then he'll say, you know what? I'm doing it tonight, even if it's West Coast, and he'll hang. But it's not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time it was us three getting into total messes.
Yes. That's right.
And I am going to miss that totally.
It will be.
Yeah, smoking cigarettes on the patio and stuff.
It's going to be really weird in Miami, too, because there is so much history in Miami.
Oh, there is.
That was my first Super Bowl road trip, 2007, in Miami.
Dude.
That was the jumping off of the bridge into the canal.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was offered the money first because you knew I wasn't going to do it.
Right.
And then Grego jumped.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Then that's when it started. That was a hell of a night, man.
Do you think of the Mavs championship first when you think of Miami? Or do you think of the Super Bowl?
I think of Stephanie Hernandez first when I think of Miami.
Yeah, he thinks of me bumming cigarettes from girls.
That was her name?
Yeah.
He knows her name!
Yes.
Stephanie Hernandez.
So registered in him that he remembers her. Stephanie Hernandez.
And the thing I think most about it is there he is, very surreptitiously, so I won't see it.
Hiding it from you.
Bumming a cigarette from her.
This is not... I was freely smoking.
I don't believe this.
I was doing smoke tricks.
I believe him.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, no, he kind of was. I just wasn't paying too much attention, but I look up and there he is smoking a cigarette.
A cigarette?
Yeah.
Corby.
I look at him. What are you doing, you idiot?
What?
And all of a sudden he starts that goofy laugh and puts it out and everything like that. And here I am reeling from this because he's
shocking.
He is the last guy that I would ever think of would do anything like that. So he puts it out and everyone, you know, I'm kind of ready to move on here. And not 3 minutes later, I look up and he's got another one.
Well, it was the best because I do remember this because the girl turned to me. She was like lighting her cigarettes and she was like, do you want another one? Because she found the whole scene to be very awkward.
Yeah.
Of Mike. Like, what are you doing? And I think she asked, she's like, are y'all related or something? Is he mad at you? I'm like, no, no, no. Hey, I smoke whenever I want. Let me just get that out of the way first.
It up.
Oh, yeah. She's like, do you want another? And I'm like, yes, I do.
I would love another cigarette.
And she gave him one, and man.
And then he quit.
Yep.
Then he cold quit. Turkey.
Yes. Then he quit. Cold turkey. Oh, well, man, thanks for coming up. We talked to you in the break, too, and I'm dead serious about this. When baseball season rolls around, a nice weekly show.
Down.
At your leisure, whenever you want to do it. We don't have to, like, set it in stone. We can do it whenever we feel like it during the week, or we can nail it down, whatever, but let's definitely do that.
Down with it.
Okay. Perfect. There he is on the ticket's 26th birthday.
Yes.
The great the Mike Reiner.
Tears.
Thank you for having me.
Back at it. Love you, man.
Love you, boys. Baby.
Yes, sir.